Succession number 28416, Reel 5.
So, Bill, you're taken back to Sagan and put in the cells. Can you take the story on from there?
Yes, the cells, it was always the same, I think, 14 days in the cells for escaping. Quite simple and quite pleasant, really, to be on your own for a bit.
14 days solitary?
14 days. Oh, we were solitary cells, yes, single cells. And you can recover from what you haven't achieved. And we eventually went back into the camp as normal. And things hadn't changed. Nobody got out. And this is July now, I think. July 1942, yes. The first one to leave the camp after that was Dougie Bader, actually, because he was... I don't know why they didn't want him in Colditz.
In Sagan. You mean?
Sorry, they didn't want him in Sagan. No idea. It certainly helped the senior British officer that Wings Day, who had been right from the beginning SBO at Bath and Sagan, was Dougie out of it, I should think. And he was sent to Colditz in... I have to look it up in the book, really, but July or August, before we got there. And that was quite a little present little departure, him going off, and you can still see it now. They brought quite a posse of Germans up to the gate to receive him into it. And as he went through out of the gate, there they all were. So he walked them as if he's inspecting his guard of honour up and down the lines with his scammy leg. And then he was gone. And about a month or two later, we were told that Jack and I were going to Colditz, but Henry wasn't. Well, we don't know why Henry was left out of it, except that being a New Zealander, I think the Germans had a different interest in New Zealanders than they had for the English. They felt they might have been doing a favour for Henry, keeping him there, rather than sending him to that terrible Straflager off leg 4C Colditz, which everybody reads about, and which was a positive home from home for everybody who went there, really.
Was Colditz's reputation, that was already well known, was it?
Good question. Very good question. So, I'm trying to think. Yes, because others had gone there. Yes. I think that dates back to Bath, really. One learned more about what the Germans did in general. I can't think of... I've got a picture of those who were at Colditz when we got there. And where were they from? I haven't had to think of that before, but Lucy Lockett, squadron leader, he was there. He was at Bath. He was another of the Blenheim boys over Germany. But I think what was known that they had gone to Colditz from Bath, and it must have been more like that. And perhaps from other... Spangenberg was another station where the were early RAF crews were put, and if they got out of there, they would go to Colditz.
So really,
but I didn't think we had any knowledge about it.
Was the, if you like, the entrance exam to Colditz was one escape attempt. Would that normally sufficient to get you...
Well, it means you've got to got out.
An escape attempt where you got out and then
yes.
was recaptured.
Yes.
That was sufficient qualification to
yes.
get you sent to Kilders,
yes.
generally speaking.
There was quite a wait, you see, about a couple of months before we actually got sent out. And I guess that information flows between the Sargon people and the headquarters in Berlin and the Kolditz and sort of, you know, somebody has to arrange the movement. But we didn't have any pre-knowledge except of what it was called, which was a Strafflager, which sounds awful. I mean, chaps with whips and barbed wire and all sorts of things.
I mean, it just means literally punishment camp, doesn't it?
I'm not good on German. Straf is a word, isn't it, on its own?
Yes. Anyway, we needn't trouble ourselves with that. My other question before we move on, if I may, is that how well in Sargon, in Stalag 3, did you know of Douglas Bader?
Oh, well,
he was a wing commander, wasn't he?
He was his wing commander, commanding the squadron, yeah. He didn't actually come to Bath. So we only met him at Sargon. He must have come from one of the other camps. He went... You mentioned Duleg, I think, at one stage, and said, did you go to Duleg? Or perhaps you didn't.
I didn't, but...
No. Well, Duleg, every prisoner after us was sent to this Duleg, where they sort of put you in camp for a time to try and learn something about you, how much you know and how much they can find out. And Dougie went to Duleg, of course, and he may have come straight on to Sargon. I don't know. Anyhow... we were posted to Kolditz, and it was no trouble to us. I mean, we weren't having any apprehensions about it, and we went by...
Before we go to Kolditz, the reason for my question about Bader was that you gave... I got slightly the impression that one or two other senior British officers in Sargon were very pleased to see Bader being shipped out somewhere.
No.
Would that be true or not?
Well,
was that the wrong impression? Have I got the
yes, because I don't know what their day-to-day intimacy was amongst them all, because they're all in different huts. But it would have been much easier for Wing Commander Day to carry on as SPO if Bader wasn't telling him what to do. He was a wing commander in his own right. He was senior to Bader anyway. Was, yes. Yes, he was. No, I don't think there was anybody else in the camp who would have been affected.
Did you come across him much? Before we get to Kolditz, where you must have done, did you come across him much in Stalag?
In Sargon?
In Sargon.
No, I don't suppose I ever spoke to him in Sargon.
Right.
Didn't know much, no.
Okay. Now we're free to...
But there were those folks of the RAF at Kolditz when we got there, so we... hadn't seen them in Sargon either. But we soon knew them.
Yes.
Right. So the train, we went in carriages, and three of us. Can't remember the journey in detail at all, except that they gave us food, a tin of liver patty, which is rather luxury, really, about that size. And it was rather like Klim, if you've ever... No, not Klim's milk. That American stuff in a tin. Spam. Just like Spam. So we had an easy trip across to Sargon.
No one attempted or contemplated escape from the train?
No, I don't think we did. No. Let's say there was no opportunity. And we walked up to the castle from the station in the daylight, so it wasn't at night. And as you get to the castle, there's quite a long walkway with stone walls each side, which gradually comes to the big entrance with the somebody's coat of arms above it. And then through that, and then facing you is the immediately you're in the Kommandantur, the German side of it, and then there's the bit where the prisons are. And up in the window, just above, watching all who come in through the gate, was in fact Dagi Bata. Give us a wave. His room was up certainly one flight of stairs, or perhaps even two, but certainly one. But I think it's only one. So you might see some great big gate, and just above it is his window. He's got a wonderful picture of who's coming and going. He cheered us on, of course. So there we were inside Kolditz. Yeah.
What were your impressions of arriving in this place?
It must be the I don't think there's a single memory of early days there. It was so different to anything else you'd been in. It was a castle, an old castle, stone walkabouts everywhere, circular staircases of stone going and climbing up in each corner, and the odd thing about it was there were so many different companies of different countries there. As you walked in, it was obvious that you weren't just in a British camp, and one gradually got to know who was who. At least that was the one good thing about, what do they call them, roll calls, I can't know what they call them, doesn't matter. Every appel, the same things happened. The Dutchman went in their place there at the foot of their quarters, the British were next to them there, the French were around the corner, the Belgians were there, and the unsurvivors were anywhere else. And that you learned of who was there. But when you're standing there, you can look around the courtyard, and there's that big gate that you came through. And it isn't in long before you realise that's the only place that's in and out. Your quarters are up three stories, I think ours was. And you had beds had double bed bunks. Yeah, it must have been. And then there's all the British side, there's a room which is the eating room, mess room, dining room, call it what you like. You've got a table, long table, and about 10 of you around it, 8 of you around it perhaps. And that's your congregating spot where you meet everybody and where you eat and where you cook as well. Yes. Yes. And so you start churning out day by day. One thing, it was very soon that Pat got out. So we very soon knew
Reed.
That escaping
yes.
was underway in all sorts of directions, but actually did work in some. And it worked because within, a week of their getting out, a postcard came back from them, written to Auntie or somebody or other, or from Auntie, saying, Auntie's arrived. Well, it was gone to Dick Howe, I suppose, the escape officer. But thinking about it, seeing Doug up above that entrance, beautiful entrance, and him sitting in his window there, he had the view of the whole German Kommandantur there that he could see. And he had been absolutely helpful in getting Pat Reed and his friends out, because they had gone straight from their quarters across to where the kitchen was. The kitchen was accessed into the British compound, and no way of getting out of it that side except through the windows. And it wasn't very difficult for Pat to get time enough in there when it was closed by having a key to get in there, and he saw through the window fastenings and come out again ready for them when they got there. So there were four of them, I think, on that party, wasn't it? I can't really remember exactly. There was one naval chap, yeah. Names have gone again for the moment. However, the link is so great, because they had an idea that they would go across the German Kommandantur from the kitchen, across to the offices, and then into the German office buildings, then get out on the far side where there wouldn't be guards. But what they had arranged was that Dougie up there would have in his room some chaps learning to play their trumpets, violins, drums and all sorts, and they were going to make music. Now, if they made music, whenever they stopped, it meant Dougie had said, the goon in the yard, there's one goon, I think there were two goons in the yard, one by the outlet gate to the park, and one for the general common, he's there, I don't know, about 24 hours a day, but certainly in the evening and the nights. And this was night, getting night anyway, and he marches around it. But Dougie was sending it, he could see that goon, and he passed the word to the band, quiet now, and then when he'd gone back to his, from there, here, start up again. And Pat Reed and his two or three mates were on the roof outside the kitchen. They'd gone through the kitchen onto this flat roof outside, and were waiting to be given clearance to cross over, get off the roof, cross and hide. And when it stopped, across they went.
So every time the music stopped, it meant that it was okay to go.
It was either that way or the other way around. I can't think which way around it was, but the music was the clue. And they safely got across, but they couldn't get in to the Kommandantur itself, because there was quite a flow of people coming back from Sagan village, probably about after the pubs had shut, I suppose, and crossing and going in at the main door. So they went down this thing they didn't know about, which was some steps going down from this Kommandantur area with the great big buildings here, and they went and hid down the steps. And it's dark down there. I'm not sure how dark. And it smelt. And they went down there, and I think they had a torch. They must have had a torch. Couldn't have had anything else. And and they might say that they came down those stairs there, and at the other end of this room they come into, there was a window. Well, an opening anyway. I should think about the size of one of those on its side. Not very deep, a bit wider. It's a ventilator, ventilation actually, window for ventilation purposes, because this is where the drains were going through. And they hadn't known about this, of course, so it was a lucky surprise. So were they rigged to use it? Well, it was high up. I don't know how. It wasn't high like this. It was perhaps just sort of walking height, more or less. And they got to there. It had bars. It had two bars, I think. And as it happens, one of them was movable. And they got it out. and that gave them this slot to go through. And Pat was the first one to be lifted up and told he'd put into it, and it went round the corner a bit too, I think. And he described it as they squeezed themselves through this quite thick wall. The castle walls must have been thick enough to lie on, I mean 5 or 6 feet, to this actual thing at the end, which was, I don't know how big, on a ship a porthole is, I'm sure, big enough to get out of, and it's about the diameter of that. Mustn't do that. And it must have been about that depth only, I should think, this place. And with much pushing from the chaps behind him, he got himself out and got out. The only tricky one was the last one to go, of course, because there was nobody to push him. But they rigged up a sort of pulling system as well, I think. The second one out left his legs in there while Pat outside pulled on him, I think. It must have had to be, because the other poor chap otherwise couldn't have got up there. And that's the end of Ducky Barter in relation to it. But he was on the mark there, you see. So his reputation was so good there. No snags at all that one reads about sometimes. There we are. Shall we have a rest?
Bill, I'd like you to tell me, please, after Pat Reed and his companions escaped, what were the consequences in the ensuing days in the camp in Colditz?
Yes. Oh, so your question really is about... of course, it was terribly encouraging to the all the rest of them who were left behind, thinking, well, perhaps I can do that too, or something like it. But there was absolutely no... nothing volatile came out of the Germans about it. I think that the German... We've got a picture, we're different people here. We've got the German army in command of this camp. And they're pretty all old, pretty mostly oldish soldiers who haven't gone to a front. They may have been at the front and come out, of course. And the officers in the German officers would be thinking about what happened as a terrible mistake on their part not to have had a means of stopping it. Because Eggers, Houghton Eggers, was very keen on his job, and they would have I'm sure taken some effort outside to make sure that sort of thing can't be done so easily before. But something happened every week almost in the way of an escape, and they had plenty to think about apart from Pat Reed, who
So escape attempts were frequent, were they?
Attempts were going on all the time. You didn't know about them. This is the rather difficult part, you see, because when you read about them afterwards, you know what's happened, but you didn't know at the time. But the ones that you do know about, you vividly remember. So I think one's got to forget years. We went there in 42, didn't we? We got out at the end of 44, more or less. That's 2 years. So we only had 2 years there.
When you say you got out at the end of 44?
Well, 45, only 3 months or 4 months. And
right,
yeah.
Okay.
But all the efforts that you've seen, something happening and know what's going on, you can remember those. The first one I can actually remember watching but didn't know it was happening was the Dutch. The Dutch were very good at escaping. They wanted to escape and get home. And the walk down to the park was obviously a temptation, because you were gone out through that big gate, and you were in a different area, and therefore you had perhaps, you're halfway to getting, if you can get over that wire, you're out. But it used to be a bit of football played down there, and they'd found there was a manhole down there, actually, an ordinary manhole like you see in every premises. And they took enough chaps down for several teams of football, you know, and had a resting place around this manhole, and lifted it up and looked down it, and it was a goal. It was just drainage for the field, I think, actually. It wasn't a sewer as such. And they thought, that's a good one, back to camp, work out how to use it. Very quickly onto this, that they first of all watched the Germans. They went and did their footballing and watched the Germans. Do the Germans ever go and look at this manhole? They didn't see the Germans ever lift it. I don't know, but they don't tell me what they're doing, of course. But they were clever enough to say, well, look, we can make that. We'll try a lift. So they went there, and the next reconnaissance visit, they made a lift on this manhole cover and found it was bolted down. So there they had a problem. But they realised that it can be overcome if you've got complete freedom to decide and find how to do it. And they said, we can replace the bolt with our own bolt. Now, you watched us this morning in the hangar there, didn't you? We were replacing bolts with bolts. All they had to have was a spanner to get the bolt out, which they made. And they replaced it with their own bolt, which they wanted to be equally successful in holding the manhole cover down. So that took a lot of thinking about, I think. But I'm told that they made it of glass. Now, glass is very strong if you don't hit it in the wrong place. It's got a jolly good tension value. And it was quite a big bolt, I guess, about half an inch probably, perhaps bigger. However, they made this glass bolt, and they made it so it would lock in there. Now, they didn't have that because they wanted to be locked down with the bolt. They wanted to be in there without the bolt. But the bolt was there until they do, in fact, get around to it. So that said, we've got a hole out there with access. Now, a fence around the park with no guards on, because they all walk back with the gang. And if we get in there, we're out. And they were. And these were the two chaps, Larive and Steinbeck, I hope. If I've got them right, it can only be that, who were put down there because they had. I probably may have mentioned this to you before, but that the target on escaping was Switzerland generally. I think I must have mentioned that when we were somewhere else. And Larive was the chap who'd been to the Swiss frontier and got picked up by the Nazis and shown the way to really get across it. So this carries on his story, Larive and they were popped down the hole one afternoon. They stayed down the hole till everybody had gone back to camp. They got out that night and they walked down to the station and got a train and got to Switzerland.
Of course, easier for Dutchmen to travel because Germany was full of foreigners.
Well, very easy, yes.
And they probably had some German, and anyway, they could have been Dutch migrant workers.
Yes. Very successful, though. But there's another escape, you see.
So they got into Switzerland?
They got into Switzerland. Well, I don't... Yes, they did. I don't know how they got home to Holland or when, but they may have come to England. I don't know. But they made the escape. And such things were happening and or failing all the time. But that is a good illustration of looking for a hole that you can get in. Now, we use that system, you see, in ours.
When you did your mole escape.
Yes.
That's effectively what it was. You dug your own manhole.
But we did, we only people, not committee, didn't know they'd done all this, of course.
Was there an international escape committee?
Well, there was, because the escape committee officers met to be a group. We're doing this, are you doing it? Yes, it was very effective. The people who were in it, for us, Dick Howe was doing it all the time. Dick Howe was the